only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with Jay Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store. On 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Greetings, salutations. Good evening to you. From inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center, my name is Jake Query. Mike Thompson here as well. So too is Landon Coons, who is the producer for Beyond the Bricks, as we put together a look back again tonight at the stories, the features, the people, all that goes into making the Indianapolis 500 the greatest race in the world, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway the greatest sports venue in the world. Mike, my question for you would be this. If the two of us were, for example, as we have mentioned on a previous show, in 1977, if we were going to the theater or the cinema in Toledo, Ohio, where you saw Star Wars, or if we were doing so in 2025, going to a movie, if we were at the concession stand, you would be purchasing what?
Ooh, that's a good one. If it was 1977, it would be a marathon bar.
Which you would have finished by 1979.
Exactly. I would have been eating a lot of marathon bars in 1977, I can tell you that.
Okay. Popcorn lightly buttered and white cheddar salt. That's my go-to today. And here is a little tidbit for you. If you sprinkle a little bit of the jalapeno, like the juice, if you will, sometimes they will have for the nachos, if you get a little side of the jalapenos and you sprinkle a little of the jalapeno juice on top of your popcorn, it sounds disgusting now, but I'm telling you, that's my tip for you. Now, you ask why I'm telling you these totally insane and bizarre things. It's because it's movie night at Beyond the Bricks. Mike, we're going to take a look back at the stars of Hollywood that have made it from the silver screen to the speedway, correct?
That's right. And we promised this earlier in the week. I mentioned it on the air. I said, we're going to do movie night. And here it is, tonight's movie night. I mean, we deliver. Look, on Beyond the Bricks, we deliver on what we say we're going to do.
Oftentimes, I mention something and then completely forget about it. But Mike is here to constantly remind me of the things that we've talked about. And that includes a story tonight that neither Mike nor Donald Davidson have ever heard, which I will tell you in just a little bit as it relates to the IMS Radio Network and one of Hollywood's biggest stars. But Mike, what is our first feature film of the evening?
We're going to first talk about To Please a Lady, which starred Clark Gable and Barbara Stanwyck. That was in 1950. And we're going to talk about this first because I love Barbara Stanwyck. My wife will tell you this. She will roll her eyes. You know, Jake, you know my wife. She will roll her eyes when Barbara Stanwyck comes on television because she knows I'm going to stop no matter what movie it is because I love Barbara Stanwyck.
Okay. So we're into the eye rolling segment of the show and we're only 4 minutes in. So here it is. Take me through what we're about to hear from this particular film.
This is the original theatrical trailer for To Please a Lady, which, again, it stars Clark Gable and Barbara Stanwyck. And this will just tell you, this was obviously a much different time in movies when you hear this. This was the actual theatrical trailer for this movie.
Okay, here we go.
Until somebody loves you. That kind of man has to have an extra dose of viciousness in him. It comes over when he gets into a race.
That's guts, not viciousness.
More than that, and you know it. He's been involved in two fatal crack-ups. There'll be a third and a fourth if he doesn't kill himself in the meantime. There's a deadly kind of instinct in him. Kill or be killed. Get or be got. Him or me. Win. Anyway, but win. A man like that doesn't realize it's in him.
You picked on me for the same reason she did. Somebody to put on the griddle. Well, I've fried long enough. And I'm not going to be buffaloed any longer by some inky-fingered dame running around hollering murder. When I meet up with her again, she'll know about it.
Well, it's time somebody roughs you up a little. I can handle you, baby. You're just another dame to me.
All the soft spots aren't on the track.
Well, you keep your mind on the ones that are.
Now, Mike, I am assuming that when your wife rolls her eyes whenever Barbara Stanwyck comes on, you at least are smart enough to not call her a kinky-fingered dame who's going to cause you any grief, correct?
That's right. Barbara Stanwyck is a, quote, was a classy dame, unquote. And so, no, there's a scene in that movie where Clark Gable's on the telephone and he's flirting with Barbara Stanwyck and he says, you know, I'm deciding what I'm going to do next. I could come visit you or I could go to Toledo. And Barbara Stanwyck goes, oh, I don't think I'd go to Toledo. She says it just like that. It's my favorite line of the
movie. Breaks your heart, right, Mike? Breaks your heart.
I love that line. But Barbara Stanwyck, I have a huge soft spot for Barbara Stanwyck. There used to be, you remember the old Union Jack restaurant, right?
Of course, yeah.
Speedway. So there used to be a huge picture of Barbara Stanwyck framed on the wall in there. And I used to actually ask all the time to be seated next to this giant picture. I mean, this thing was like 16 by 20, if not bigger. And I would always ask to be seated next to this giant Barbara Stanwyck photograph. I mean, I'm just a huge Barbara Stanwyck.
Mike, I hate to tell you this, but the Union Jack and Speedway, when it closed, all of its interior items were put up for auction. I actually have the original host stand from that restaurant. I'm sorry that I did not know of your infatuation,
I'll tell you that the photograph that hung outside the bathroom, there were three signed photographs, Pat O'Connor and a couple other drivers. It hung outside the bathroom at the Union Jack and Speedway. That is now hanging in my bathroom.
How did you not get the Barbara Stanwyck poster?
Well, it wasn't up for sale. If they would have auctioned it, I guarantee you I would have bought that.
But, well, let's hear from Donald Davidson about the 1950 film. Of course, it was a race-themed film, part of how that ties into tonight's topic. Donald Davidson on To Please a Lady.
It's a pretty decent film, a little corny in places, but it's pretty decent. And the scenes that I think of, you asked about the other people that appeared in it. I'll do two things here and I'll wind up with that part. There is a part when Clark Gable has decided that he's going to sell the midget and then buy a championship car. And so he comes into this garage, and that's where he meets the Will Gear character and purchases a car that's actually was the Don Lee special that ran at Indianapolis in 48 and 49 with Mack Hellings. Now, I'm going to back up a little bit. When Clark Gable came to the track to make the film, and which was at least his third trip to the Speedway, but he was going to be staying a little bit longer. Tony Holman and Wilbur Shaw had him come in, and although he was Tony Holman's guest, and I'm going off another little bit of a tangent here, I believe that probably the reason that he got involved back here, Clark Gable, was through Wilbur Shaw. Because he used to go to the races in the 30s, and Wilbur Shaw won and would win the trophy dash and the features at the Legion Ascot Speedway that I was talking about earlier with the Morales brothers. And Wilbur Shaw lived out there for a while during the winter and taught flying, and I'm guessing there's a possibility that he taught Clark Gable to fly in the 30s. So when he came back in 47, and there's that famous shot of the start of the race with Clark Gable sitting in the in the grandstands, almost in the foreground. I rather think that maybe it was Wilbur Shaw that was the link. But anyway, so he's coming in to make the film To Please a Lady, and Tony Holman, being the perfect host, says we need to get him something decent to drive around, and they knew that he'd just taken delivery of a Jaguar XK120 in Los Angeles. So they said, let's see if we can find him one. So the story is that Wilbur Shaw, they found one in Chicago, Wilbur Shaw went up and then drove it back, and that's in the Speedway's collection, and it's been used in commercials and so on and so forth. And that was Clark Gable's drive-around car for the month of May in 1950. Now, back up to the wheel gear scene. He comes into the garage, and as he walks through this garage over to wheel gear, there is a lighter-colored Jaguar XK120 sitting there. My guess is that that was his personal car, and that they shot it in Culver City on the lot, and I bet he probably drove it to the studio that day. That's a theory. All right, now, a thing to watch for is that there is this scene where the photo, the panoramic photo, is done, breaks up, everybody's walking back to their cars, and Clark Gable's walking back towards his car, and then Barbara Stanwyck calls to him over the fence, and she, you know, they were sort of enemies for a little bit. She's a journalist, and now they're becoming romantically involved, and he comes over to the fence, and they have this little scene where they're talking to each other for a few moments, and she's basically saying, oh, be careful, and it's dangerous, and look after yourself, kind of a thing. And if you look in the background, everybody's walking back up to their cars. Now, it's not a back projection shot. They're actually filming that, and I'm thinking that they... And for those that are interested in filmmaking, you do dozens and dozens of takes and probably end up using the first one. They had one opportunity to get that right, because if they tried to say, all right, let's do another take, all the people would have finished walking past them. So I fascinated when I watched that.
Now, there are several movies like that that would take place or involve the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, especially in that era, whether they were filmed there, based on it, whatever it may be. Another one of those, an early Hollywood film, and Mike, you found out it was a favorite of Donald's, is The Big Wheel.
That's right. Donald and I bonded originally over the fact that he wrote an article for the Carl Hungness yearbooks, and it's my favorite thing that Donald has ever written, and Donald's written a lot of stuff, but my favorite thing he ever wrote is an article about The Big Wheel, and I just love the article. But there's a scene in The Big Wheel that we're going to play where Billy Coy, which is played by Mickey Rooney, has a chance to win the race, but he drives through. They actually use the footage of the Duke Nalen crash, and they have him drive through it. He catches on fire, and he barely escapes. But Bill Holland passes him at the end to win the race. So we're going to play that scene, and then we have something quick to talk about afterwards.
All right, here we go.
Oh, that's so hard. Get your arms up, Fred. Let's find a doctor.
Never mind about my arms. A race rider.
We'll rebuild and try again next year.
Yeah, with whose dough?
Came in third.
But those cars that passed me.
All but two are in another lap. Yes, that gives us enough to build any car we want. Come on, now, let's get your arms fixed.
And now, moving into the green lane, it's Bill Holland, car number 7, the Blue Crown, a runner-up for 2 years in a row, and this year, 1949, it's Bill Holland here.
Easy, now don't worry.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention please. Bill Holland has made one of those wonderful sporting gestures that make automobile racing the sport that it really is. He will not receive the famous BorgWarner trophy, the cup that has always been presented to the winner of this race, but he insists that the officials award custody of the BorgWarner trophy to a driver who did not win the race, but who won the hearts of the whole racing world with his skill, his daring, and his great courage. We present the trophy to Billy Cannonball Coy.
Mike.
So here's what I want to point out about this clip. So Bill Holland has
Rick
lost
Mears
the
has won the 1982 Indy 500. Gordon Johncock's done the sportsmanlike thing, right?
Yeah, Here's what I want to point out. So Bill Holland loses the race in controversial fashion to Maury Rose. Then he finished the second twice in a row. He finally wins the race and he says, oh no, I don't want the trophy. I'm going to give it to the guy who finished third. And here, you have custody of the trophy now. What do the BorgWarner people think about that?
A.J. Foyt didn't win a fourth Indy 500. He actually allowed Gordon Johncock to get it because he knew how hot Gordon was that day.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of the most absurd scenes in movie history.
Absolutely fabulous. Mickey Rooney was in the film, as we talked about, and this leads up to the story that actually is the kind of the motivation for all of this, because I had mentioned in a previous episode my run-in with kind of Mickey Rooney with the IMS Radio Network. But before we get to all of that, Donald Davidson met Mickey Rooney in 1978, Donald, on that meeting.
And he said, I just wanted to get out of my contract. And he said, I made 14 films in 1 year, and some of them were stinkers. And one of the stinkers was The Big Wheel. Although, actually, it's not too bad. Well, so Red Dillon's son, Russ Dillon, did not have his own dealership yet, but he eventually would be a local dealer here. And he was driving the limo. And so I called Al Blemker, who was the director of publicity for the track, and said, you know, would it be okay if we take a lap? And things were a little bit different in those days, so it was easily done. And so we got into the limo, and Mickey Rooney sat in the back seat with a fellow named George, who didn't seem to really care, a manager type, I guess. And then Tom Keating and I had the little pull-down seats, so we were looking backwards, but straight at Mickey Rooney. And so we went around, and we went through turn two and down the backstretch, and Mickey Rooney says, as we're going down the backstretch, he says to George, oh, he said, you see those barns? That's where Vukovich went out. I said, that's right. How did you know that? And he said, oh, well, that was famous. I remember that. I said, well, that surprises me, because I said, I got the impression that when you made The Big Wheel, you didn't really care about racing. He said, oh, yeah. He said, yeah, no, I follow it. And he said, I know about the Foyts and the Unsers. And he said, this girl, what's her name? She does a hell of a job. I said, Janet Guthrie. He said, yeah, Janet Guthrie. She does a hell of a job. And I said, I can't believe this. So anyway, the magic moment is we're going further down the backstretch, and we're about to enter turn three, and I'm sitting on this little seat looking straight back, and I've got Mickey Rooney here, and I've got the track very slowly going by with the turn two sweeps disappearing, and I'm thinking, you know what? I am looking at the exact angle that you see in the movie with Mickey Rooney driving the race car with back projection, and other than the cameraman in 1949, I'm the only human being that's ever seen this particular view. And I don't know if that means anything, but anyway, that was just a very special moment for me. And I said, is it true that you never came to the track? He said, I came here after the movie came out. He said, I came here to do a publicity shot. And so when he rode around the track on this day that I just described, that was only the second time he'd ever been to the track.
There is a reason that, as I mentioned, this topic all came about, and that's because I happened to mention in one of our previous programs that I was asked, along with Mark Janes, Nick Yeoman, members of the IMS Radio Network, to be a pallbearer upon the passing of Mickey Rooney. Mike had never heard the story. Donald's never heard the story. Most of you probably have never heard the story. So we'll change that, and we'll do it on the other side when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Jake Query, Mike Thompson, Landon Coons here. It is Beyond the Bricks. We've been talking about movies as they intersect with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We just got done talking about, of course, a movie that featured Mickey Rooney. and The Big Wheel, the name of the film, Donald Davidson meeting Mickey Rooney. And I guess now, Mike, it's time to tell the story here. And I will do so in his, what's that?
I think that's a good idea, yeah.
Okay, so the following is a true story. There is zero embellishment to it. And I apologize if it comes off as in any way insipid. It certainly is not intended to. In 2014, I was doing an afternoon radio show in Indianapolis with a long co-host of mine by the name of Derek Schultz. And I was getting ready to go to the Long Beach race. And on the radio program, a week before the race, we were talking about the upcoming Long Beach race, about a week out or so. And Derek asked what I was going to do. And I said, well, you know, one of the things that I do enjoy doing is seeing historical landmarks and things like that. And I said, there's actually a cemetery that has a lot of the stars of yesteryear that are, you know, the final resting place called Forever Hollywood. And I think I might go visit it. And he said, well, who all's buried there? And I said, I don't know. You know, just some of the stars from the 50s or 60s. You know, people like Mickey Rooney, for example. Well, instantly, our phone lines and my Twitter account started blowing up from people saying, Mickey Rooney is still alive. And, I'm very sorry to Mickey Rooney. I meant no disrespect at all, which I didn't. It was strictly, I was just trying to think of a star of the 50s, and he was as big as any. The weekend comes, we do the show, coming back on Monday, and everyone calls because over the weekend, Mickey Rooney had passed away right after I had made that comment. So people are like, oh my gosh, you know, as if it was some curse or something like that. So I definitely need to go to this cemetery, even though Mickey Rooney's not a part of it, because now it had become this big theme that everybody knew that that's what we were talking about. So we get to the race in Long Beach, and we have downtime after practice and everything on a Saturday. And Nick Yeoman, Mark Janes, and myself go to Forever Hollywood Cemetery right around dusk. So they closed, you know, very shortly. And there were a couple of online, it had said you could go to the flower shop at the cemetery to get a map of the stars that are buried there. So we go. It's a very compact but confusing-looking cemetery. I'm not sure where the flower shop is, but I can tell that they're about to close because the sun's starting to set. But I see a gazebo that looks like it would be a flower shop, and I go walking in, and the other two guys wait in the car. And as I go walking in, I interrupt a huge celebration and party going on of predominantly men, none of which speak English, and lots of empty vodka bottles. And one of them pulls me over and immediately pulls me in, and I have no idea what's going on, but he insists that I go with him to go visit the grave of his father. Now, you asked for the story, Mike, so I'm telling you. So as I'm trying to say, no, I'm just looking for a map of the cemetery, but thank you, he begins walking me out into the cemetery to go visit the grave of his father. A curious Nick and Mark have left their car and are walking up, and I'm trying to say to them, let me just go appease this guy, and then we're going to get in the car, and we're going to leave, and none of this is ever going to be spoken of. So the guy takes me out to the grave of his father. We come back to this feast and vodka-flowing celebration. Nick and Mark have now made best friends with everybody there. There's this huge party going on. You would think that, like, they had grown up with these guys. Well, it turns out that what I had walked into was a celebration of life on the anniversary of the passing for one of the employees at Forever Hollywood, who was the gentleman that took me out to meet his father. This is customary in Armenian culture. And it just so happens that one of the attendees and the only attendee of the party who speaks English is the president of the cemetery, who we start talking to. I ask him, hey, can you give us a private tour? And if so, who can we go see? And he says, well, actually, on Monday, we are going to put to rest Mickey Rooney. And I said, wait a minute, Mickey Rooney is here? And he said, yes. So he ends up giving us a tour of the cemetery. He takes us into his office. He allows us to see the email exchange between Mickey Rooney's estate, which was his great nephew, I believe, and the cemetery about where, in fact, Mickey Rooney's resting place would be. And as he is going through all of this, and I've left out the vast majority of incredible detail of the other things that we saw at the cemetery, but he then asked when all of our flights were, and we told him that we were all going back on a red-eye Sunday night after the race, and he kind of slumped in his chair, dejected and depressed, and I said, why? And he said, well, because the reality is that we need pallbearers for Mickey Rooney. because he has outlived the majority of his family. He is estranged from the one person who was in charge of his estate, and I'm using employees, but one took a PTO day and the other's not feeling well. And if you guys were willing, I would love to have you come to help us lay Mickey Rooney to rest in his final resting place. So that, and very long form, although in abbreviated form, is the IMS Radio Network connection to Mickey Rooney some 60 years after he had filmed The Big Wheel at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So there you are, Mike.
That is incredible.
Happy
that
you
is
asked.
Amazing, amazing story. Absolutely amazing story.
Let's go back to movie night, shall we? Let's go to 1969. This is a movie that I had mentioned in a previous show, the Can-Can Theater in Indianapolis, showing different movies that related to the Indianapolis 500. That's where I saw Paul Newman's 1969 film Winning, the vast majority of which was filmed at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Here is the trailer from 1969.
Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward. They know what it's all about. They live what it's all about. They make pictures like Winning that way, too.
You're a winner.
What else?
He just wants to win. He doesn't care what the stakes are.
How is it between a man and a woman when the man thinks winning is everything? And the woman thinks mostly of love.
Is where you always come?
With men?
I understood you. I just wanted you to know I'm not easy.
Yes, how is it between them? Free and easy?
I'm all yours.
Stormy? The way it really is with most any couple? Paul Newman. Joanne Woodward.
I can't live two lives. I can't live yours and mine, too.
In this kind of game where winning is everything, on that big 500 oval in Indianapolis, you can die any second. If you live, your nerves sing like an uptight guitar, and the vibrations hit everybody.
What would you do?
And there's my wife, I'd kill her.
You'd kill her, huh?
Yeah.
Not him. Why not both of them?
There was this guy high on winning. And this girl high on him. And, well, you take it from there.
Don't you judge me!
Mike, one of the things I think that's amazing about that, and the film Winning was really a pretty cheesy film, but the vast majority, like I mentioned, of matter of fact, almost all of the racing scenes take place at IMS, and it is amazing how much it looks almost remarkably the same, obviously, today, although the garage area where he spends a lot of time is a really good glimpse into what it looked like in that time period. But you have your own meeting with Paul Newman, who would become very involved in racing. I want to get to that, but also it is amazing how back in those days, movie trailers, by the time you've seen the trailer, you wonder what's left of the movie to see, right?
I have a question as well about movie trailers, which is how did they get anyone to go to the movie after these trailers? Because some of these trailers are absolutely awful. And so, like, for example, if you dig up that trailer, that Winning trailer that we just played, if you watch the video version of it, I would go, I don't want to see this movie. So I don't know how they got anyone to go into the theater to watch some of these films.
And what part of the movie, once you go, did you not see in the 25-minute-long trailer? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, but Paul Newman is somebody that would get involved in racing, obviously, from an ownership standpoint. He already kind of had the racing bug before the film, but as you can attest to, when he was at the racetrack, Paul Newman was a guy that loved racing, but also pretty down-to-earth guy.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about Gene Hackman later on in the last segment. And I actually met Paul Newman and Gene Hackman on the same day, the 1993 Michigan 500. It was an incredible day for me. I spent time with two different, you know, absolutely, you know, astonishing actors. But Paul Newman, I watched the entire 1993 Michigan 500 with Paul Newman, which is one of my favorite memories of all time.
Now, the Paul Newman in that film, Bobby Unser makes a cameo because he had won the Indianapolis 500 in 1968, which is the year that they used a lot of the footage for the film winning. And while it was a brief cameo for an IndyCar driver, Johnny Rutherford also appears in winning. There are several that, even though probably the biggest film when it comes to the sport of racing, didn't involve the Indianapolis 500, Mike, but that's not to say it didn't involve a lot of drivers who would come to Indianapolis.
That's right. Probably the most well-known racing film most acclaimed racing film is Grand Prix. And while it doesn't have any direct ties to the Indianapolis 500, really, there are several drivers and people who connected to the Indianapolis 500 who appear in the movie. Graham Hill's in the movie playing the role of Bob Turner. Bruce McLaren's in the movie. You know, my favorite, Jochen Rindt, is one of my favorites, is in the movie. Richie Ginther's in the movie. So I pulled a clip from the movie. One of my two favorite clips of the movie is the driver's meeting, where the character, Jean-Pierre Sarti, is kind of leading a driver's revolt, and all the drivers are together, and several drivers that you'll know their voices are actually, you'll hear them in this clip.
Here it is from the film Grand Prix.
What really scares me here at Spa is driving into a cloudburst. Doing 160 in the dry, then you're suddenly driving into a wall of rain. Can't even see the car in front. Just like trying to swim underwater in the dark.
Please, Bob, in a moment. The point is, gentlemen, the road condition on the approach to the SSB for Stavelo have not been improved over last year. Is anything, they're worse.
Well, I must say, I don't see how they could possibly be worse than last year.
Let's write them a letter.
They file letters.
A strongly worded letter, official, from the Driver Association.
They have a special file for strongly worded letters from the association.
Are we going to talk about calling this race off to the Venerine?
No. Please, Richie, one thing at a time. Subject is road condition.
Now, they haven't changed the road in 10 years. They're not allowed to do it now.
Look, we all know that you're taking your life in your hands just driving this course in the rain. So when are we going to do something about it?
A strongly worded letter demanding that the road be paved in the worst place.
The road by tomorrow, so what's the point in talking about?
That's what I say, but we talk about this business of rain every year. It's damn well time we did something about it.
Well, let's demand to cancel it if it rains.
You can't cancel this place.
Gentlemen, what about the flag marshalling?
The driver's meeting from 1967, actually not terrible acting, truth be told, but now we're going to hear from one of your favorite clips of the film, correct, Mike?
Yeah, James Garner, of course, gets the big, you know, lion's share of the praise for that movie. But it's actually, in my opinion, Yves Montand has the two best lines in the movie, playing the character Jean-Pierre Sarti. My wife will tell you I use a couple of these lines too much over and over and over. But these are my two favorite lines for the film Grand Prix.
What are you going to do now?
I don't know. Gotta get a ride for the rest of the season. I don't know where.
Pete, do you ever get tired of the driving?
No.
Lately, I sometimes get very tired. You know what I mean? Very tired. Before you leave, I want to tell you something. Not about the others, but about myself. I used to go to pieces. I'd see an accident like that and feel so weak inside that I wanted to quit. Stop the car and walk away. I could hardly make myself go past it. But I'm older now. When I see something really horrible, I put my foot down, hard, because I know that everyone else is lifting his.
What a terrible way to win.
No, there is no terrible way to win. There is only winning.
That's the line you use, right, Mike? What a terrible way to win, Mike. No.
No, there is no terrible way to win. There is only winning. But the one I use actually over and over and over tends to be Pete, do you ever get tired of the driving? I use that a lot.
I simply use I'm older now because I know the realities of myself, right?
And Eva Marie Saint is in that scene with Jean-Pierre Sartre's, with Yves Montand's character. She's still alive. She's 100. She turned 100 last year.
And we have one Hollywood star who we recently lost at the age of 95 that has a great connection to the state of Indiana, but a great connection to racing as well. We'll let you know who that is as we continue to look back on this movie night of Beyond the Bricks.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
From inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center, Jake Query, Mike Thompson here, Beyond the Bricks, taking a look back at movies that related to the sport of racing. Oftentimes that means relating to or filmed at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Certainly when it comes to movies that took place in the state of Indiana, Hoosiers is one that will always be in the lore and the hearts of those from Indiana. That was in 1986. But Gene Hackman, the star of that movie, was involved in other sports-related films. For that matter, of course, as we talked about with Hoosiers, he was also involved in sports car racing for a time, including in the Rolex 24 at Daytona. He got involved in many different aspects and areas of the sport of racing. And I guess one of those that just kind of became a race fan, as we see, was not uncommon for for actors of that era, Mike.
Well, that's the case. And he actually got involved with Dennis Firestone's team at the Indianapolis 500 in 1983, which people may or may not be aware of. And then in 1993, as I mentioned earlier, he came to the Michigan 500 because he was working on a deal with Gallus Racing and Al Unser Jr. to basically, you know, buy into the team, be involved with the team. And I happened to be walking through the paddock at Michigan International Speedway, and there was kind of a crowd around Al Jr.'s, hospitality area. And I thought, okay, well, they're waiting to get Al Jr.'s autograph. And a buddy of mine happened to be standing there, and he goes, oh, Gene Hackman's in there. And I said, where? And there's this bearded guy, a guy with a beard, and he's eating an apple. And I'm like, where? And he said, right there. And I said, well, that's not, he said, no, that's him. He's got a beard. And it was Gene Hackman. And he came out and he signed autographs for all of us, took pictures, and we couldn't have been any nicer. And he said, yeah, well, hey, because I'm hoping to be here long term involved in IndyCar racing. And so we actually have a clip from the broadcast, the 1993 broadcast of the Michigan 500, where he talked about wanting to get more involved in IndyCar.
Possibility for a team expansion, by the way. Gary Gerald has an update.
Well, Paul Newman, of course, an Academy Award winning actor, has been involved in IndyCar racing for many years, but now there's another Academy Award winner that comes on the scene. This is Gene Hackman, who was announced today as going to be an investor in the Rick Gallus Racing Team. And Gene, you're sitting here now on pit wall watching your new partners hard at work. Tell us about the feelings and what's brought you into a very active role in IndyCar racing.
Well, it's really exciting. I'm really going to be a spectator, kind of a fan for quite a while until I understand exactly what's going on. But so far it's been wonderful. We're not having very much luck today, but we hope that changes.
Are you going to become a hands-on partner in the future?
Well, eventually I'd like to sit up here and maybe handle one of the drivers if we run three drivers next year.
And of course, you've been in the cockpit many times in different types of racing yourself. Will you continue that part of your racing career?
I don't think so. I think I'm getting too old for that. You can see this gray beard.
I understand that's for the latest movie property, Geronimo and Wyatt Earp. Of course, we've been enjoying you in the firm. Welcome to IndyCar Racing.
Thanks a lot.
Paul?
Of course he is, Sam Posey. Pretty good race driver in his own right.
Yeah, I raced against him at Long Beach in a pro-am sort of thing with Toyotas, and he was running a real strong second when I came up on him. He's really quick.
And speaking of...
Yeah, so there are a lot of celebrities at Long Beach in the Toyota Celebrity Pro-Am races that would take place that would get their chance to try to bend the wheel. Gene Hackman, one of those. Here is actually Gene Hackman, a clip from one of those races, talking about his love for racing, his love for Indianapolis.
The place Raise Long Beach, the event, the Long Beach Grand Prix, the celebrity, star of the French Connection, Oscar-winning film, Gene Hackman.
We're building a little race car, my son and myself and a couple other fellas.
Is your goal Indianapolis ever?
Oh, no.
This is it.
This is about as far as I go. I'll go. Yeah, I grew up right close to Indianapolis, so I saw the 500 races when I was a kid, and it always kind of stuck with me that, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, it really is very exciting to be here. Is this the car that you're going to be racing?
Well, one just like this. We're going to draw the cars out of a hat, evidently, so that everybody gets a fair shake. Now, cars are supposed to be all fairly evenly prepared. We practiced last Monday out at Riverside. Side, and even though the cars were evenly prepared, the drivers weren't. I was one of the least prepared. But it was enjoyable. I really had a good time.
Terrific. It's marvelous speaking to you, and good luck.
Yes, thank you.
It is amazing when you hear the voice that you immediately know who that is in Gene Hackman, and just kind of the pleasant demeanor, the calm nature of his voice. Of course, when you get behind a race car, that might change just a little bit. Hackman is just one of a number of actors who loved to race. James Dean, of course, a native Hoosier that loved racing and was on his way to a race weekend when he was fatally injured in the 50s in California. Steve McQueen, another Hoosier. Patrick Dempsey, just to name a few. Gene Hackman in a very rare interview on his thoughts on the sport of racing.
What is it exactly that draws actors? I mean, you have Paul Newman, of the late Steve McQueen, yourself now, Burt Reynolds. The actors seem to be drawn to motor racing. Is it a sort of this macho image, or what is it?
I don't think it's macho so much as it is the excitement. It's really it's a big buck deal, and you're around a lot of hot machinery. You have the same thing you have in Formula One, a lot of foreign drivers and crew members, and it's a nice mix, and you get a real sense of international racing.
Which would you choose, to still be an actor or to be a racing driver if you could do it all over again?
Well, I consider myself a fair actor and a kind of a fair to poor racing driver, so I would have to stay with acting. Though if you had asked me that when I was 17, I'd probably give you a different answer, but I think in retrospect, looking back, I'm much better off being an actor.
A lot of fun looking back, Mike. We're going to close the show here with one of our favorites, right? The, of course, from Parnelli Jones involved. It is one of the all-time best, is it not? Checkered Flag or Crash, the trailer for it, to wrap us up here on this movie edition of Beyond the Bricks.
Checkered Flag or Crash. Checkered Flag or Crash, the first story about off-road racing. Jeep pickups, Jeeps, buggies, and bikes in a no-holds-barred chase over 1,000 miles of the world's roughest terrain. Don Baker as Walkaway Madden.
I'm a wrecker.
Susan Sarandon as the reporter.
Till I quit or you crash.
Alan Vint as Turtle.
I mean, the best race car driver in the world can't carry one of these across the finish line.
Larry Hagman as the promoter.
I do business the way you race cars. Win or crash.
All-time racing great, Parnelli Jones.
Fly out and fly down.
Checkered Flag or Crash.
Friday night on HBO.